You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
We saw European shares dipping into the red today as forecasts of a slower post-pandemic economic rebound in the UK hit London stock markets, and that filtered into the rest of the region. Disappointing quarterly updates from Glencore and AXA weighing on broader sentiment. US markets are about flat, awaiting the stimulus impasse to be resolved. And we were pretty much flat on the day as well, up by 0.05% to end the day at 57,660 points. Sectors in the green, resources up 0.5%, industrials marginal, again, call it flat. Financials down just under 0.5%. Property index down 0.6%. And the gold index, 1.3%. Your street dogs tonight, Chantel Marks, head of equity research at F&B Wealth and Investments, and Pietri Redlinghuis, founder of Herenia Capital Advisors. Pietri, sum up the mood for me today. Well, maybe you can sum up the mood, Chantel.
I think that you summed it up quite well to begin with. Markets even today were quite directionless. And when you look at what happened in the UK specifically, the Bank of England not quite sure what's going to happen going forward, and that's filtering through to markets. In the US, that impasse in Congress about the new stimulus package has really left traders in the air in terms of what to expect next. And then you get jobless data that comes out better than expected, which actually worsens the situation in Congress, because the big impasse is about further unemployment support. Even when you look at the companies that came out today, Glencore, great results, doesn't pay a dividend, disappointing the market. So we're in a funny space, and it's quite strange these days to see the market end up just 0.05%.
It is quite strange. It's weird. It's a bit of a meh amidst all of the coronavirus news stories and vaccine stories and stimulus and gold to the moon and back, and even gold had a bit of a breather today. So perhaps we should look at some company fundamentals then, because we don't have all that much time. And MTN, the first one out the blocks, first half headline earnings up 120.5%, but within guidance. And again, to your earlier point, no interim dividend declared on this one either. And the market seemed very lukewarm with these results. If you look at the numbers operationally, though, it doesn't look terrible. If you look at revenue, top line growing 16%, subscribers 9%, an improvement in the EBITDA margin, this one was priced for perfection.
Yeah, so I think that this result was actually quite solid. I think the result in South Africa was particularly encouraging, where MTN has kind of played second fiddle to Vodacom for several years. I think what's quite positive is the fact that they're looking to exit the Middle East. I think that the focus on Africa as a region makes a lot more sense for MTN. The Middle East is an exceptionally volatile area to operate in. They've had massive issues in Iran cell, with Turkcell challenging the legitimacy of their licensing. There's a war raging on in Syria. So it just makes sense from that perspective. Another positive is that they've committed to still about 25 billion rands worth of asset sales, which could bring debt down quite a bit. So a lot to like from the MTN result. I'm quite surprised that the market didn't love this result, but it might just be because debt remains quite sticky still.
Yeah, but and Pietri, I believe we've got you back. Welcome, Salah. Good evening. we do, if you look at the winners and losers from COVID, I think telcos, data companies, tech companies, they're the undoubted winners. We are consuming more data. We're playing we're playing Fortnite at home. We're streaming at home. We're working from home, and all of that requires data. So if you look at MTN, this is one that ticks all of those particular boxes in a high-growth emerging market like Africa, pulling out of a risky market like the Middle East. Why do you think it was down just over 1% on the back of these numbers?
Well, I think that, you know, we did actually get a trading statement from them not so long ago. So as you say, it was also in
price.
I mean, there's nothing really new in this, right? What is interesting is that I think that during the sort of height of the panic, which we all were subject to, myself included, you know, down to 30 rand was maybe a bit extreme. And at the time, we couldn't necessarily see, what was is now glaringly obvious that, yes, lockdown is going to make a ton of money for these guys. And they've got something like 261 million subscribers. And okay, sure, not every country locked down as hard as you know, others. But I think that we probably have a permanent shift in the way that we do things. You know, we see huge corporates extending their work-from-home things all the way until sort of the end of 2021, some of them. And that's going to, on a global level, increase the demand for primarily data. So I think this is a discussion I think we had a while ago, how telecommunications companies eventually turn into utilities because it almost becomes like a right or a need for you to be able to communicate to people. And over time, you know, what was interesting also is that we were very fearful around, well, if these regulatory rules come in, how much data is allowed to be charged, how much of an impact is that going to have on companies like MTN and Vodacom? You know, how much damage does that do to their earnings? And, well, you know, nothing like a good old pandemic to keep everyone at home and double the data usage to completely offset the forced lower prices, right?
They
were very big winners.
And Ralph Mapita, a great CFO, I think he was the CFO of the year at the last CFO Awards. He was CEO of Old Mutual Emerging Markets, so came from financial services. He's actually got an engineering background, ticks a lot of the right boxes in terms of a replacement potentially for Rob Shuter. Chantel, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that MTN's management team have now been together for a little bit. I would have liked Rob Shuter to stay on a little while longer. But to me, I think they're doing the right thing. So promoting from within would absolutely make sense to me. Mm. I think that would probably be the preference over an outside candidate.
And it was revealed today. All will be revealed in the next sort of 4 to 8 weeks. So my money is certainly on Ralph being announced the new CEO. Probably the kiss of death. Ralph. Mondi, Pietri, to Chantel's earlier point about dividends. Here's one that's paying a dividend again at long last. Mondi's share hit a 17-month high on the back of this. And really quite an upbeat assessment of e-commerce-driven demand for its product. So all round good stuff for Mondi and Mondi shareholders.
Yeah, this is actually one of the things that we've been sort of we've been on the lookout for, is that, you know, with everybody being at home and e-commerce really booming, and then particularly if you look at companies like Shopify that's had pretty much doubled their revenue and things like that. And there was, I think you and I were having a conversation about this a couple of weeks ago, where the adoption of e-commerce has, there's been faster adoption of e-commerce in the last 4 months than there had been, well, it's now 6 months, than there had been in sort of the 10 years leading up to this, right? And these, people like Mondi and Nampak and those companies who produce packaging for particularly online shopping and that kind of stuff are stand to be huge, benefactors of this. And it's been interesting to sort of not see the market really realize this about Mondi. And then today the results come out, and they've had a fantastic day. I mean, almost 6% up, it was way up over that at one point. So it's really, I think it was a really, really good result from them, to tell you the truth. And I think that given the new sort of normal, if you will, it's probably only going to get better.
And then into REIT land we go, Chantel. Hammerson hammered again on the back of this massive rights issue. It's set to raise more than £800 million. But I think lessons here, as bad as this is, for how Intu could have played it and decided to go a different route.
Yeah, I mean, I think what helped Hammerson was that they were probably significantly less indebted than Intu, and they also have much better assets. So it did help in terms of their property revaluation. So even though they are finding themselves in an incredibly difficult situation, when you are looking at property valuations, I think it's down about 20-odd percent this year, or at this remeasurement date. If you looked at Intu, it was down closer to 30-40%. So what that translates to is that Hammerson's debt relative to its property value doesn't look as bad as was the case for Intu. So they still have a little bit of wriggle room. The rights offer is massive. But it will also have a pretty substantial impact, and it will bring their loan-to-value ratio, or the ratio of their debt relative to their property value, down from about 50% to close to 40%. So that should give them a little bit more muscle to negotiate the next couple of months in the UK, which has been incredibly tough. I mean, if you look at retail collections in some of these shopping centres, it's about 30% in the UK. In South Africa, it's closer to 70%. So very, very tough for UK retail at the moment.
South African retailers, you should be fighting your landlords harder, it seems. Chantel Marks, Head of Equity Research at FNB Wealth and Investments, and Pietri Redlinghuis, Founder of Horinia Capital Advisors, with your view from the market.